This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Mira Sivasodhi. It's a Friday. It's our health and living segment. Dr. George Lee, consultant neurologist with us. How are you, George?
Good afternoon. I'm feeling great, you know.
1 week before Chinese New Year.
Very excited.
Have you started tossing Yi Sang yet, like the rest of them?
Have you started tossing?
I'm sure it's pantang, you know. If you ask your grandmother to toss yisang before Chinese New Year, I mean, is that really something that you can do?
I don't know. It's like the yisang thing is a very KL thing because we're from Kota Baru. We eat nasi dagang on Chinese New Year.
Do you really?
You know, seriously. I mean, seriously, you can get a lot of people who are from Kota Baru who vouch to that. You know, yisang thing, you know, I was abroad for so many years. When I came back, you know, yisang thing was very, very new to me. So I'm still trying to get used to it. But we eat nasi dagang on the first day.
Yeah, well, that explains it, because the yisang, apparently, the tradition of tossing was started here in Malaysia. Mm. It's not a Chinese thing.
That's
in China,
right.
As such.
You know, somebody somewhere out there in Klang Valley made that up.
Well, it tastes great, so why not, right? It's like a salad. Love it.
Colourful salad.
Absolutely love it. Okay. All right. It's Cervical Cancer Awareness Month, the month of January, and coincidentally, last week we saw the introduction of an improved version of the vaccine for in this fight against the human papillomavirus as well, which is linked to cervical cancer. So we have also joining us today, George, Professor Dr. Jamia Hassan from the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology, University of Malaya. Welcome back. We had you on a year ago.
That's right.
Yes, Mira. Thank you
absolutely
very much.
Absolutely 1 year ago.
Good afternoon.
You're most welcome. You know, how have you been?
Yeah. That's right. You keep coming
I've
back.
I've been fine. I think the year started great. Fantastic. But I haven't got yisang yet.
I know. Don't hang out with George.
Yes, because you end up eating nasi dagang.
Yeah. Hang out with me. You get the yisang.
Well, do you not think this year is kind of like Chinese New Year spirit is not quite there yet?
Not yet.
It's crazy. It's next week, right? So we're 8 days away from the first day. Mm-hmm. And then usually, you know, people will just, go out, you know, eat, drink and do a lot of merry thing. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's just too close to Christmas. We just recovered from one festivity.
But we'll start from today onwards.
And
maybe people are a little bit more prudent. I don't know. My mother calls me and says, don't spend too much money. But it's self-fulfilling prophecy, isn't it? We all hold back. Mm. There's nothing to churn the economy. Mm. And then, you know, it ends up going down, isn't it?
Mm, that's right. We need some stimulus, package like from the BFM crowd to go out there to spend.
Yeah, like brim.
That's right.
So, anyway. Okay, we'll come back to that. We completely digress. Cervical Cancer Awareness Month from Jamia.
This month is Cervical Cancer Awareness Month. So yes. I'm actually very excited because of the new vaccine. Mm. Because you said just now, Mira, the improvement of the an improved vaccine, but I think it's a new vaccine, not an improved vaccine.
You want to
elaborate on that?
Yeah, just go on. It has been part of the National Immunization Program. I mean, it's just not one, but it has been a part of it.
It's just that before it was Gardasil 4, it's quadrivalent.
Okay. It was quadrivalent. 4 years.
Yeah, so
now it's
four.
Nonavalent, so that's nine.
Correct. Right.
So initially, that's not really an improved, but it's actually a new one.
A brand new one.
But it's just that it still has the subtypes of HPV virus of the fourth vaccine, the four valent, now an additional five. So, well, technically improved version, but it's also actually the new.
Right, okay.
Let's talk about cervical cancer. Are all cervical cancer cases caused by the human papillomavirus?
Now, you know, it's almost 100%.
Really?
Caused by human papillomavirus, wow. Yes.
Okay. Well, I mean, that discovery was not too long ago, right?
It was in the 1980s.
So I can, when we went to the presentation, apparently 1982 was the year that it started, and that's the first time that Malaysia had our first introduction to McDonald's. Apparently,
really?
It was so long ago.
Yes, I remember that.
You remember that? That's sure how old she is, right? Okay.
Well, speak for yourself, George.
That's right. So it's interesting how. First of all, everyone laughed at Howson when he presented that HPV as a virus, sexually transmitted infection, arguably the most common sexually transmitted infection, is linked to cancer. And it took us so long for that to a vaccine that is introduced. 82 until now, we're looking at, you know, 30 or 40 years.
I think the vaccine was introduced in 2006, am I correct?
Yeah.
Or 2007?
2006 was licensed here. And the first introduction here in 2007. And in 2010, it went into the NIP program of the Ministry of Health.
And cervical cancer is one of the very few cancers where we know what actually causes it.
True.
Yeah.
Cervical cancer is the only cancer among women which you can screen. But not many women come for screening, like doing a pap smear. Yeah.
And now, reasons why women preventable.
Yes, and now preventable.
Preventable,
yes, exactly.
That's right. Yeah. Why are women not comfortable coming forward to do a pap smear? And I think that the numbers are like 43% of Malaysian women only do pap smears.
There are many reasons, Mira. And one of the reasons is sometimes women think that they have no time to go, and they also worried about the results of the test itself, or they're not aware of the test. Or maybe when they go to see the doctors, and the doctors themselves do not ask the patient about the pap smear, because sometimes the doctors think it's something so trivial and not important to ask.
And doctors make assumptions that, you know, you're up to date with everything, your mammography, your pap smear and everything.
And sometimes women are very shy. Imagine going to see a doctor like George, you know, and they get very intimidated by him.
Indeed.
Jokes aside,
but it's incredible.
Rest assured, you do not see George
because
I
deal with different...
No.
I deal with the counterpart. I deal with the offending source, right? Okay.
But there are similar doctors like George.
That's right. I mean, so you can just imagine that for doctors, it's a taboo to ask, you know, when was the last time you used a pap smear? And for women, to volunteer that information, you know, is another barrier, right?
I don't think it's a taboo, George. It's just sometimes the doctors think that asking for pap smear, asking for contraception is something so simple.
Right.
And they tend to overlook asking that. So I think if they ask that, it's a very short answer probably. Because many, many reasons why a woman doesn't come. Most of the time is shy, they have no time, they're scared of the result and so on.
And it's not the most comfortable test to do.
Yes, it's not the most comfortable. Agree?
Yeah. I mean, there are two things that I would like to highlight. First of all, is that I like the way you said that some women don't even know that HPV is associated with cervical cancer. That part, I think it's extremely important. So a show like this to bring awareness and the whole cervical cancer month is crucially important to say that. Number one, this is technically a sexually transmitted infection that is preventable and that is serious enough to stop its transmission to prevent the progression to cancer.
Yes.
And number two is that, I mean, when I went to the launch of this vaccine, I heard 6 women per day in Malaysia contracted cervical cancer or had the diagnosis of cervical cancer. And to me, that is scary. That's alarming, isn't it? And in a vast majority of these patients should really... I mean, these are preventable diseases.
Yes.
I mean, and especially that we know almost 100% of the cases are 100%. Caused by the human papillomavirus.
6 per day.
But it's interesting because I've always felt that viruses are rascals. They're always ahead of us, you know, and it's amazing that we're able to come up with a vaccine. But because the strains in human papillomavirus, there are more than 40 strains, I understand.
The human papillomavirus, there are more than 200 strains.
Okay.
The one that caused cancer, which is oncogenic potential, probably there's only 15 and 20. So that's small. So vast majority doesn't cause cancer. So it's only about 15 to 20. And we know that HPV, human papillomavirus 16 and 18, cause 70% of cervical cancer. And that's substantial. And we know the others, like 31, 33, subtype 45, 52, 58, will cause another 20-odd%. And there are other subtypes that can cause cervical cancer. So all in all, it's almost 100%.
Okay. So what you're suggesting is that in the last decade or so, Malaysia has a program for girls in the school from age of 9 to 13 to 26, right? This this vaccine is licensed. But in Malaysian girls, it's age 13 years old to be given this vaccine. Yep. So in the last decade, we had protection for the girls, but we're looking at best 70%. So what is the new version of protection that the new version of this vaccine is going to achieve?
Because we said that the commonest subtypes of the HP virus that cause cervical cancer is 16 and 18, like 70%. And by adding another five subtypes, like 31, 33, 45, 52, and 58, those are all the oncogenic HPV subtypes, we improve the coverage from 70% to 90%.
Wow.
And that's very good.
When you say oncogenic subtype, what do you mean?
That means cancer can cause cancer.
Inducing cancer. The inducing potential cancer, to induce cancer, yeah.
Okay. So the quadrivalent, which is the first vaccine that came out, only covered four strains, 6, 11, 16, and 18.
18, 6, and 11.
Okay. And the thing is, 16. The one thing we've forgotten here is the whole idea, the whole genital warts connection as well.
Yes.
A lot of it does lead to genital warts. You want to just explain a little
genital
bit more?
Genital warts, 90% of genital warts is caused by HPV subtype 6 and 11, which is covered by the quadrivalent vaccine. And that data, you know, the Australian data, they started the NIP program pretty early, 2006 or so, and they had the catch-up to a woman to about 26 years old. And later on, they also approved the vaccine in boys, 2011. Therefore, they have huge herd immunity, and they have shown remarkably that the prevalence of genital warts and STD visits has come down tremendously to a very low level, meaning to say that the vaccine works. Of course, they do not publish about the prevalence of cervical cancer that has come down, because they only have to look at surrogates of cervical cancer. They've been looking at the severe dysplasias, CAN3, and that has shown also has come down tremendously with the quadrivalent vaccine itself. So having said that, now you have a new non-valent vaccine, which is 9-valent vaccine, which covers more than 90%. So we are looking at a potential of eradicating cervical cancer in future, which is so exciting.
Absolutely. I mean, eradicating, that's a big word. I mean, what was the last time we used it?
That's right.
Smallpox?
Yeah. Because so we have the potential.
Yeah,
potential.
That's great, potential.
But if the potential, which will generate a lot of discussion with the Klang Valley listeners here, because there's always that fear, isn't it? When it comes to vaccine, you always get a group of people, a group of parents who have that apprehension or the concerns and things like that. I think it's a perfect opportunity for the Klang Valley listeners to call in if they have any question, any concerns, anything they would like to ask about vaccine related to HPV.
Yes, we've got both the doctors here, the one who looks after the women and the other one who looks after the men.
Yeah, because
and
this is a disease that affects both.
Yes, we always think it's a woman problem, but it affects the men in a big way as well. We'll come back to that. So give us a call. The number is 0377 109 000. You can WhatsApp or text 0162 019 000 or tweet BFM Radio. We have a question here. Is it certain that the virus of cervical cancer is transmitted by your sexual partner from no other source?
And that's
not dirty toilet handles.
Yes,
that's right. Because everyone goes on about the dirty toilet seats. Yeah.
And that's certain. And then many, many research have been published in that area, and we're absolutely certain that's the mode of transmission by sexual-related activities. And it's HPV infection is actually pretty common. It's about 70 to 80% of us who are sexually active will have the potential to get HPV infection.
I mean, that's what I was reading, that one in two of us will contract HPV.
We already got it.
at some stage in our lives.
Yeah. But of course, not all of us will have the infection because our immune system will work also to sort of
get rid of it.
Yeah, get rid of the virus. So that's why it pays to keep your body healthy.
All right, okay. So essentially, out of the 200 subtypes, a few of them are oncogenic. The vast majority of them can stay dormant in the body because our immunity is good enough to fight them off.
The vast majority doesn't cause any problem to mankind. And the oncogenic one, yes, is cancer-inducing HPV virus. And 6 and 11 are non-oncogenic, but it causes genital warts, than 90%.
So my question is, right, as George said, say it progresses to an infection, genital warts, and your body, you treat it, or even if you have it and it doesn't present as an infection, your body sort of fights it. So does it harbour, does it sit dormant in your system?
Genital warts.
Yeah, and it can flare up any time?
Yes.
And
genital
is it then sexually transmitted at that stage?
Genital warts is one disease that it's not easy to treat. It can come back again and again and mm-hmm. again, especially when there's stress related. So it's not an easy infection to treat once you get it.
I mean, in my practice, I treat a lot of genital warts, and it's distressing for the sufferers because, number one, it's unsightly. Number two, it can be uncomfortable, painful. And number three, it's that every time you get rid of it, you think your past had been buried, and then when it comes back, it reminds you of your past that you would rather be forgotten. It's emotionally and physically extremely taxing for sufferers.
That's a very difficult thing, isn't it? I mean, If half of us stands the chance of infection or rather getting the virus at some stage. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a scary thought, actually. Yong, you have a question.
Hi, Yong.
Dr. George and Mira and Dr. Before I ask the question, you say that there are women who having the excuses
of not doing a pap smear.
Yeah.
Yep.
But isn't sound like more like the male gender?
Okay. All right.
Okay. So sorry about that.
Yeah, I didn't quite.
Don't mean to put you down. Anyway, so my question is, I got the understanding. I don't know whether mammogram since then, from what I understand, mm-hmm. that whether it's improved, that the mammogram is not comfortable.
I as well. Okay. Yeah. All right.
Listen on that.
Thank you. Bye bye. There you go, Prof. Jami. I mean, we're going to just digress a little, the mammogram.
Yes, mammogram is not comfortable, of course, but it's something that women are recommended to do. Yes, it's not comfortable because there is a sort of two-plate machine that press the breast, compress the breast to a certain level. Of course, it doesn't compress completely. So it compresses to a certain level so that the imaging studies can be done. Yes. Okay. I agree.
You make a great point, is that, you know, he identifies these sort of excuses, reasons not to do any checkup at all. It's a very male gender orientated approach, isn't it? Treatment seeking behavior in men, it's more kind of put it off. I'm too busy, you know, it's like it's too uncomfortable, too embarrassing. I don't know much about it. It's true. But the thing is that when it comes to, you know, cervical cancer, I'm sure you come across many, many patients who put this off and then come up with all sorts of excuses.
Yes, the thing is, when we say about HPV infection and we get the infection, doesn't mean you will get the cancer. And for the time you get the infection to the time you get cancer, you have to have persistent infection. So meaning if you get an infection, HPV infection, within 2 years, studies have shown that women clears the HPV infection. Men tend to clear it slightly longer. And for those who doesn't clear the infection, probably less than 10%. And so that means from the time you get an infection to the time the cancer appears, it takes about 10, 15 years. So this is the window period we want the woman to come. Most of the time, this HPV infection, if there are cytological changes on the survey, there are no symptoms. Pap smear, the only one that can screen whether there are any changes in the cells in the cervix. So this window of opportunity will sort of allow us to treat women before it becomes cancer. We know that you can treat them, and the results can be very good, 100%. But if they don't go for the pap smear within this window, but it's a long time, you know, it's 10 years or so, so then it's sad because this is one of the female cancer that we can screen quite efficiently with pap smear, which is a secondary tool, no doubt, but it's sufficient in screening. So now we want to shift a secondary screening tool like pap smear to a prevention approach.
Yes.
Because we said, true, many reasons why a woman doesn't come to do the test. Similarly, like woman doesn't come to screen for breast mammogram and so on. But I think it's a good opportunity to sort of push it to a prevention stage.
Right. So what you're saying is, in the past, or even now, if you catch the virus in the window period, which is before it presents as cancer.
As a cancer.
You can vaccinate at that stage and treat it?
It has to treat the dysplasia first, depending on what type of dysplasia.
What do you mean by dysplasia?
The cellular changes in the cervical cells.
So it progresses from dysplasia to precancerous and into cancer.
Okay. Yes. So you can treat the dysplasia first, maybe CIN1-2 or the severe form, CIN3. And now current recommendation is, even though it has been proven that you have dysplasia, cervical dysplasia, which the likelihood is due to HPV virus, we still recommend vaccination after treatment because studies have shown that it does reduce recurrence even in this group of patients.
What is the treatment?
The treatment is either they do a cone biopsy or they do a laser taking out the cervical, I mean the dysplastic area by laser.
Okay.
So it's kind of like an intervention in order to get rid of the abnormal tissues.
Abnormal tissue.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. Even before it becomes pre-cancer.
Yes. Okay. And that's the idea.
Sure. Yeah. Hmm. I mean, Prof, the thing about cervical cancer, obviously, there's some degree of stigma because, mm-hmm. you know, when I come across men who come over to see me when their wives are diagnosed with having abnormal cells detected, mm-hmm. you know, because we know that this is sexually transmitted. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of time it opens up kind of like a question marks in a relationship. How do you handle that, you know, whenever that, you know, it comes into that sort of question?
And that was really my question. We'll come back and find out more up next. How do you have that conversation with your partner? Mm. Coming up next. If you have a question on cervical cancer or the human papilloma virus, give us a call. The number is 0377 109000. You can tweet BFM Radio or text or WhatsApp us on 0162019000. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Mira Sivasothi. It's our Health and Living segment. And in the studio with us, Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist. Mm-hmm. Only means it's a Friday. I'm always so pleased, you know, to see you, George, because that means it's the end of the day.
That means tomorrow you don't need to come to the office.
It's the mark of, you know, the last show before I leave.
Yes.
And we have Professor Dr. Jamia Hassan with us today from the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology, Faculty of Medicine, University of Malaya. And we're discussing, as I said, it's Cervical Cancer Awareness Month. We're trying to understand this even better. I think there's always this. Someone, you know, said to me, stop this talk about the blame game. I mean, who started sexually transmitting this virus? Was it the men or the women? And apparently it's a waste of time. Don't even bother finding out. Is that true, George?
Yeah, well, just, you know, early on, I mentioned that whenever there's abnormal cells, and then the first thing that, you know, the lady has to deal with and the potential of this abnormal cell progressing, on top of that, has to find out how did this happen, who started it, and that sort of thing. And that creates incredible amount of anxiety and strain in the relationship. Do you encounter that?
Well, not really. I know that some patients will ask us about you see it's sexually transmitted, sort of where do I get it from? I know it's a sensitive question. So we say, yes, it's sexually related and it's pretty common among sexually active people, 75 to 80%. But I think it's very difficult. Of course, it can put a strain on a relationship. It's difficult to blame who passed it to who. So the sexual connotation to this so makes the vaccine aura not so acceptable in a way.
That's right. Yeah, but the thing is,
because you're encouraging in a way.
Yeah. Okay. But studies have not shown that, yeah. You know.
But if you look at the reverse of it, 20 years from today, we won't even be having this conversation if the vast majority of us are vaccinated. And then that sort of like conversation about who started what, whether the virus was there or not, it's no longer here.
So it has to be a globalized effort, George. I mean, sexual relationships are globalized as well today. And
if
you go to countries where it's not part of the
But the thing is that if one is protected, I mean, I must confess, you know, as soon as the last quadrivalent vaccine came out, I was the first one to get the injection.
Did you?
That's right. I must say, on air here, I am protected.
Paranoia.
It's not paranoia because...
You see, I can judge you from that.
Yeah, okay, you can judge me. Right. Well, some people will judge and say, are you promiscuous enough order to do that? Or are you just crazy enough to worry about contracting the disease?
My question is very simple. What are you concerned about?
What am I concerned about? Okay, right. Let me just put it this way. My rationale is 3 vaccine is going to potentially stop me from getting genital wart, penile cancer, throat cancer, anal cancer, and then also potential of protecting my partner from getting vulvar cancer and cervical cancer. It's a price worth paying, and therefore I'm injecting.
You know, I vaccinated for more than 3,000 people in our clinic, in our program, in the university. So when I counsel the patients, I do say about it is this cervical cancer, or anal cancer, penile cancer is sexually related. But I don't harp on it because the point is vaccine is to protect people. Mm-hmm. So I want to empower women, men to protect themselves because that's what vaccine do, protect. So we must sort of downplay a bit the sexual connotation. Because if not, people get very nervous. You know, when the NIP started in 2006, people were very scared and say, okay, so if you vaccinate these young children, are they going to become promiscuous later? So I get questions from Muslim couples that if I get vaccinated, doesn't mean that I'm promiscuous. No, we shouldn't think like that because vaccine is to protect whatever vaccine it is.
But you said early on that there is evidence to suggest that protection like that will not encourage promiscuity. Yes, yes. Right? What sort of evidence is that?
No, that one is in terms of the sexual education, remember, George?
Oh, yes.
We were talking about it, and there are research to say that if you put sexual education in place in school, it makes the children more promiscuous, and study did not show that.
It's the same thing.
No,
yeah, absolutely.
Didn't.
We have Chong on the line. Okay, we've lost him.
Okay, because we've been blabbing on too much.
Lee, how are you?
Hi.
Hi, Lee. Good afternoon. Good afternoon.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, so I know that, like, the HPV, like, causes the genital warts. Okay, my question is, even when after it goes, it becomes latent, would it be possible to pass on to your sexual partner?
Okay, so after, okay, sure. Thank you very much, Lee.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. Okay. So essentially what you're asking is that, you know, after you have got it, can you pass it on?
Yes.
And then, and also I would add one more part of it. If you have already got it, can this vaccine protect you? So Prof, what do you say to that?
If you get the genital wart, yes, you can pass on just on to your sexual partner.
Almost 100%,
yes,
right?
Yes, almost 100%. And
even if it wasn't an infection.
No,
it doesn't appear
as an infection.
You know, even though there is no visible wart, yeah, it is still transmissible.
So most of us could possibly have it and not know, yes, that we have it. And hence, we can pass, yes, it on to our,
yes,
partners. Is,
yes,
the question.
You can pass it on to your partners. And even so, let's say if someone gets genital wart in pregnancy, so during delivery, can it also pass it to the fetus? To to the fetus when it passed through the vaginal canal. But once you get the HPV virus 6 and 11, which 90% that cause genital warts. Let's say the one you got is HPV6 that caused genital warts. So the vaccine will not protect you against 6 because you already got 6. But you'll still be protected against 11, 16 and 18. Mm. So it's still worthwhile to take the vaccine even though you have genital warts. Or having said that, if someone say, oh, I have CIN1 and that's been shown to be related to HPV virus. So if you subtype the virus or you subtype the HPV DNA, it says it's HPV16, for example, and you can still take the vaccine because you still can be protected against the subtype. You are not being infected. So it still pays a lot to take the vaccine.
So, I mean, I also am under the impression that even people who actually had been infected with same strain, let's say for 18, mm-hmm, and then if you have the vaccine, your protection is enhanced.
You will
reduce the rate of recurrence,
yes,
of the
That's
genital
with the
warts.
Nine, with the
That's
nine
right.
Valent.
So, you know, or even the quadrivalent. If, let's say, I have a wart that keeps recurring and then I verify that this is strain 18, mm-hmm, even if I did quadrivalent and then my chances of recurrence is reduced by significant...
I see. Yeah, okay. All right.
So
doesn't get rid of it.
But it will prevent your visit to go and see doctors for treatment.
So currently in our practice, if a patient has genital wart, we still would advise to take the...
To take the vaccine.
Yeah, the vaccine, the quadrivalent vaccine that we have now. And later on, if they want to take the 9-valent vaccine, they can.
Okay. And and that's available now. Not part of the National Immunization Program.
Yes.
But you probably got to do it on your own. Question, is there a risk of women who are not sexually active contracting HPV or cervical cancer?
If you're not sexually active, there is no genital contact or there is no oral sex, then the risk of contracting HPV is very small. It's almost zero.
It's nearly zero. So is it right to assume that everyone born, there's no risk of HPV, you're only contracting HPV whenever you have sexual contact, skin to skin?
Yeah, we're talking about the HPV subtypes it cause.
Right, cause cancer.
Yeah.
No, right, okay.
Okay. When you talk about stigma, that's another reason why young girls perhaps now don't come forward. I think I spoke to Dr. Musa the other day, the consultant pediatrician, and he shared some research done in Negeri Sembilan. He happens to be from Negeri Sembilan. I didn't tell him I was, but actually I am. And where they had done a survey on young children and when they became sexually active, and the age was, average age was 15 years old. Mm. And hence the reason you want to catch them at 13.
At 13.
Yeah, and right. I also said a lot of us are in denial that our children are not sexually active, but they are. Mm.
So, our children are only sexually active at the age of 35.
See, that's why you vaccinated your daughter now, didn't you?
That's right. Well, she joined the program. So, it's like, the two things that I'd like to bring up is that there are lots and lots of parents out there, because the vaccine program in Malaysia has been around for 8 years now. This is seventh
2010.
Year. This is 2010, yep. This is seventh year. Mm-hmm. So what's going to happen for those people who already have the quadrivalent, and then now with the new vaccine, I'm sure many parents will be ringing in to say what should happen to them. And some adults already have the injection of the quadrivalent. What do they have? And I would like to encourage whoever feels concerned about vaccinations, or actually stop your kids from vaccination, perhaps call in to tell us what are your concerns.
And for me, if you're a boy, give us a call. This affects you as well. I mean,
that's
we always
right.
focus on the women because it's cervical cancer. It's a very obvious thing, but you know what, boys, you have a role to play in this as well, in protecting yourself, right? So give us a call. The number is 0377 109 000. Tweet BFM Radio or text 0162019 000. We'll come back and follow up on this after the break on BFM 89.9. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. I'm Meera Sivasodhi. We're continuing this discussion. It is Cervical Cancer Awareness Month, and we have Dr. George Lee, consultant urologist, with us, together with Professor Dr. Jamia Hassan, who is from the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology, Faculty of Medicine, University Malaya. This is your chance if you want to ask them a question on HPV, the human papillomavirus, cervical cancer. You want to find out about anal cancer. You want to find out about genital warts, or even the vaccine and the efficacy of the vaccine. Give us a call. The number is 0377 109 000. Tweet BFM Radio or text 0162019 000. Shuko, you have a question.
Hi, Shuko.
Yes. Hi, doctor. How are you?
Good. So, what's your question?
My question is very simple, doc. I mentioned about HPV, the vaccine on for the men. I read about the news in South Africa where WHO had done some study and scale up program about mass, what they call it, circumcisions. It can reduce of HIV and STD.
Mm-hmm.
So my question say that since in Malaysia with some of that religious practice about circumcision, what is your opinion if someone have done circumcisions and also taking the vaccine?
Mm.
What is the, as a point of view as a urologist and ONG something.
Okay, thank you very much, Shuko. Thank you for your call. Bye-bye.
Well, there's two parts to the questions. First part is the protections against HIV. We all know that men who have circumcisions actually have less risk of sexually transmitted infection, including HIV. And this is being done in sub-Saharan Africa. And it's a huge, Bill Gates and Melinda Gates program. And then it's been rolled out. A lot of people have, concerns about this, but however, the data is actually showing that there's protection. And transmission of HPV is also reduced for men who has got foreskin. And then, however, actually that is not complete, because it's just like HIV, it's reduction, but it's not complete protection. But with this vaccine, it is protection. Okay. So,
I did read, George, that men who are not, it gives space for to harbor the virus easily.
That's indeed, that is the case. So therefore, I guess with circumcision and also the vaccine, is double protection, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, the interesting thing that, Shuka was asking, mm-hmm. is that how important is the protection of men for the reduction of cervical cancer? Because we always talk about that herd immunity. I have this feeling that if we do not protect the boys as well, mm-hmm. we will never, ever eradicate cervical cancer. What's your thought on that, Prof. Jamia?
Well, that's true. Because men can pass to the partners. And as I said just now, when women have the infection, HPV infection, if their immune system is robust, they will clear the infection within 2 years or so. But men has been shown to clear the virus later. But if you look at data, the prevalence of HPV infection among women as they grow older, it reduces.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the opposite in men. The HPV prevalence in men,
that says a lot,
is
right?
The same among all the ages, and it shows that as they grow older, it can go higher.
Does that translate to women are less naughty as they age?
You said it, George. I didn't.
It has been said that probably it's related to sexual behaviour. So yes. That means that if the woman prevalence of HPV infection as they grow older is lower,
naughty
but they
boys.
Still have a potential to get the infection from their sexual partners.
Mm-hmm.
Because in men, it's regardless of age. As they grow older, the prevalence of HPV infection can go higher. So therefore, they can pass.
That's right.
On.
So many advocates, like in Australia, they say, look, the only way to eradicate this is just to
vaccinate
everybody.
Yes. The boys and the girls.
Why are we still seeing that over the last 10 years, only the girls are being vaccinated and only about 4 countries that only have boys program? And in all the other countries, if boys want to be vaccinated, you just have to volunteer or pay for this. Why is this happening?
George, I think it's a question of cost, because in Malaysia, cervical cancer is in the top 3 cause of death among women. So the cost of managing cervical cancer in Malaysia is very high.
Mm.
So on the other hand, anal cancer, penile cancer in men in Malaysia, the prevalence is increased, but it's not, the burden of disease, I think, is not similar.
Mm.
So if I'm the administrator, so if I have to choose...
then you choose whatever disease burden.
Yes. Cervical cancer is one of the top 3 cancers amongst women in Malaysia.
That's right. Like cancer worldwide, 6 million people are diagnosed every single year. But the thing is, what I'm fearing, and many advocates are fearing, is that we're going to relive the whole situation with rubella vaccination, because for a whole decade we were only vaccinating the girls, and realized that we couldn't eradicate that disease. Only a decade afterwards, and then we realized that the only way to get rid of the disease is to vaccinate both. So in a way, it's almost like effort wasted and years wasted in some way.
Ideally, yes, that's what we should do: vaccinate everyone, the boys and the girls. But I think we still should think about...
I mean, we're lucky enough just to start with the girls.
Yes, put in NIP. I think it's great for the government to at least start an NIP for girls.
Yeah.
And hopefully later they incorporate the boys.
But do you think by vaccinating the girls, is there any remote chance that the herd immunity will protect the boys?
If you want to herd immunity, you have to vaccinate quite a lot.
Okay.
So it's not enough. Because
it's not half the population.
No, currently we're only vaccinating the girls. We are not doing catch-up. So our catch-up up to the age of 25 are out of pocket.
Right.
So you will still not get herd immunity with this kind of vaccination program.
So it will take another decade or so.
Yeah. Longer, George.
Yeah, longer, much longer. Mm-hmm. And the thing is that I read in the data in Malaysia, we have something like 95% completion.
3 doses.
Yeah, I mean, what happened to that another 6% or so? Is it opt out, or is it because of private schools, or and who get missed out in this? The net.
I won't be able to answer that, so we have to look at the data. But I think having almost a 97-98% 3-dose completion rate is absolutely great for Malaysia.
It's very good.
I would have contributed to that statistic, George. I didn't put my children through the National Immunisation Programme. I decided to pay for it myself.
All right.
Well, that's great.
Yes, I know. Why, I don't know. But so somebody like me would not be reflected in the 95%. Am I correct?
No, this is only the NIP program.
Okay, so it's only the NIP. Yeah. So you're not taking into private sector vaccinations and all of that. Okay, so there you go. It's probably higher than 95%. It's just that it's not reflected in the number that was shared.
In the general population, I think it's less.
Well, we're looking at the 95%, so we have about 5-6% of opt-out in the NIP program. Is that right?
No, it's just at the 3-dose completion rate.
Completion rate.
So probably they complete 2 doses for some reason, or maybe 2 doses or 1 dose.
I must say, when I proposed for that to be applied to my kids, my wife showed some reservation because, you know, all the press talking about...
There's a lot of misinformation out there.
You know, things like that. And then, so, you know, whenever you have women coming forward to say, look, you know, I want the protection, what sort of concern they usually voice to you?
And these are young girls, 13 years old, and it's a relatively new vaccine. It's not an old vaccine.
Yes.
It's only about 10 years old. How would you allay those fears?
So we have to, of course, we have to talk to them through about the vaccine and talk about the safety profile. But we also need to tell them that, you know, the safety profile, the WHO, the CDC are monitoring the vaccine worldwide. So currently there are more than 150 million doses.
150 million?
Yes, are being given worldwide. More than 60 countries have the quadrivalent vaccine into or the HPV vaccine into the NIP program, whether it's bivalent or quadrivalent, then that's a lot of countries, more than 60 countries. So we're talking more than 150 million doses, George. And so far, the safety profile has been good. There's no bad cases or untoward cases. So if the listeners want to go and check the safety of this vaccine, they can just go to the CDC website, type in vaccine safety, and they update the website regularly. And so far, WHO, CDC has said that the vaccine is safe to continue and there are no real serious adverse effect to the vaccine. So when I counsel the patient, I will ask them what their concerns. Let me go through one by one and see what, to allay their concerns.
What are their conception. Concerns?
Most of them, sometimes they read on the internet, so they worry about the syncope, you know, when the patient had the vaccine, they feel like fainting spell. They usually occurs in young adolescents. So we had, I think I vaccinated, when I vaccinated about 2,000 students in our student, we had two students who had a syncopal attack. But because they're so scared of the injection, so they get the syncope attack, but after that, they're okay. Most of the time, that's the question they ask. Or will they get, you know, this autism, which is not related at all to this HPV vaccine.
Well, so, I mean, the thing is that that's always the concern, that as a parent, you're making decision on behalf of your
child.
Kids.
Yes.
And then you always think that, you know, something 20 years later might come back and say, look, that was something, is linked to another condition.
Yes.
Because somebody mentioned something about Guillain-Barré syndrome and that sort of thing. No matter how much the pharmaceutical, the CDC's, FDA is trying to prove it, the patients always have that concern and say, but we don't know. We only have 10 years of this track record.
Because it's my child.
That's right, it's my child. And then have I done anything wrong? But for those patients, the potential of missing this can mean 20 years from today, you're facing with cancer. Is that a risk worth taking?
Well, we're talking a lot about immunotherapy, and this is one example of immunotherapy, isn't it, when it comes to cancer, in a way. Vaccines, using your own system to fight the cancer eventually.
Well, vaccine is not immunotherapy. Vaccine is prevention. So it shouldn't be taken as immunotherapy.
Well, immunotherapy is naturally behind after the cancer is there. You build your immune system to fight the cancer. This is even before the cancer can get to your body.
Which is really quite amazing.
This is like, you know, there is no other preventable cancer apart from HPV, and also we have a huge protection for hepatitis B. Hepatitis B causes hepatoma, and then hepatitis B is an incredibly successful program to prevent cancer, and these are the only two vaccines I can think of that can stop you from getting cancer.
Another question: after a hysterectomy, does the patient need a pap smear to check the vaginal wall for cancer?
Great question.
If they have hysterectomy for benign causes like myoma, uterine fibroid, or heavy bleeding for some other reason, then they do not need a pap smear. But if they have a hysterectomy from cervical cancer, then, of course, they will still need to be seen.
Yeah. Well, the interesting thing the listener actually put on to the message is that obviously cervical cancer is one of the causes, one of the cancers that is induced by HPV, but HPV can also induce vaginal and vulvar cancer. So for somebody who...
And anal cancer.
Yeah. So is there any need for pap smearing or any vaginal examination in order to prevent that sort of, you know, HPV-induced cancer for somebody who is not vaccinated?
Well, now the screening profile has changed slightly. So now people are looking into HPV DNA screening mm-hmm. rather than looking at pap smear. So if you do a HPV DNA, because we know the culprit is HPV.
Mm-hmm.
So if you do a HPV DNA and you find that you are HPV DNA negative, so the recommendation now is to take a vaccine and you do not have to do your cytological smear for the next 5 years.
Wow. So essentially,
it reduces the need for a pap smear as well.
Yes.
Right.
But if you do a HPV DNA test and it's fine, you're positive, then you need to come back for a smear for a cytological assessment to look at whether or not you have dysplasia for every year because that's what it is.
Okay.
So that's it's a good triage, actually.
Mm. Okay. How is that done, HPV DNA?
So now there is a kit. Now there's a test kit.
It's just essentially a small amount of the washing, or even just a swab, right?
Yes. Question: going to get tested for sexually transmitted infection prevention is ideal, but getting tested in Malaysia is so expensive. How do you get people motivated to go when cost is an issue?
Well, if cost is an issue, to test for HPV DNA is, I agree, is expensive. That's the reason why we said don't test, just take the vaccine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, fantastic.
And
George,
then protect your kids from the beginning with the
this
vaccine.
This one's for you. I've heard this before as well.
Yeah.
I've heard that HPV caused Michael Douglas's throat cancer.
Right.
Is that proven?
That's right. Well, this is because he said that
he blamed oral sex for
doing
throat cancer.
That. Okay.
But was he right to do so, Prof. Jamia, do you think?
Well, in a way, he actually did the condition a favor because he actually put the condition in the limelight.
Yeah.
So, you know, we need to invite him to come here to do some swaps, right? Okay. Michael, if you're listening, all right, okay, if you're not at the Trump inauguration, we're here to do it for you.
Yes, of course. Ken, it's a question for you, George. Can men be screened to find out if they have the human papillomavirus?
Oh,
and
okay.
And can they find out what is the strain?
This is something that I always face because, you know, when a woman has this abnormal pap smear and then they're always sent to me and then, you know, so I can't do it because we can't scrape we have to use sandpaper to scrape your...
That's going to encourage a lot of people to come forward,
right.
George.
So I'm in a difficult position whenever men pop by and say, the gynecologist tell me to come and see you, so what are you going to do to me? Then I show them the sandpaper and then they run away.
Yeah, there is no screening tool for men to look for HPV.
Unfortunately.
Infection.
And last question, the homosexuals.
Mm-hmm.
Will a vaccine like this help the homosexuals?
Definitely.
Indeed. I mean, MSM, men having sex with men,
mm-hmm.
actually this is a group that is significantly protected by this because there's quite a large number of men who is having sex with men actually have anal wart, and that is incredibly debilitating and then actually cause significant risk of dysplasia and cancer inducing, and then therefore this is definitely one treatment that is required.
Fantastic. We're running out of time. Prof. Jamia, your message.
I'm actually very, very excited about the new 9-valent vaccine, and I think women has a chance to increase the protection from cervical cancer from 70% from the 4-valent vaccine to the 9-valent vaccine. And I think women should be empowered to sort of protect their own life, and vaccine is one way to protect their own life. But of course, having taken the vaccine, you must not also forget about the pap smear. But I think a healthy woman is very important because women take care of the family. A healthy woman means a healthy family.
Mm.
A healthy
economy
husband,
means a healthy,
healthy
woman.
Economy.
Yes.
They can take care of the
men
children.
Why are you doing
I don't know what to say.
Is there a way of eradicating
these
people?
That's right. Because we're not protected. That's why. Because the government is actually diverting all it to protect the women.
No, that's not true.
Your message, George.
My message is that I've given myself a Chinese New Year present. I'm going to get my vaccination today. And then so I'm going to get the vaccine for 9, HPV, the strains. And then that's going to be my Chinese New Year present. And of course, Gong Yi Fat Choy to everyone.
Gong Yi Fat Choy. All the best to you, George. We won't be seeing you for a while.
Yeah,
so
for 2 weeks. I'm going to go back to eat my nasi dagang.
Nasi dagang. That's probably the...
That's
Thank you both for joining me today. Dr. Thank George you. Lee, consultant urologist, and of course in the studio with us, Professor Dr. Jamia Hassan, Faculty of Medicine, University of Malaya, talking to us about cervical cancer, this Cervical Cancer Awareness Month on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.